Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 537. I'm in New York for like a day, and it's late at night because I'm on LA time. So I'm not talking as loudly because I'm sure that whoever's in the room next to me does not want to hear me record the intro for the Nerdist Podcast. Not because I'm sure they don't love it, because they don't want it to be spoiled before they get to choose to hear it. That's probably what it'll be. You'll just have to wait. People who I think were having sex earlier, or just bouncing up and down in the bed for fun. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of Nerdist Podcast, NatureBox, which is a subscription snack service starting at $19.95 a month, where you can discover and enjoy healthy, delicious snacks on a monthly basis. And they deliver them right to your doorstep for free. That's almost into your mouth. Each bag of snacks is full size. It's got 3 to 5 servings of snacks within it. They're healthy snacks. There's no high fructose corn syrup. There's no trans fats. There's no artificial sweeteners or flavors. Some of the snacks you can get, coffee kettle popcorn or seaweed rice pops or whole wheat figgy bars. If you go to naturebox.com/nerdist, which is in lowercase, you're going to get 50% off your first box. It's only $10 for your first box, and then you'll be hooked. So go to naturebox.com/nerdist for 50% off your first box. Thanks for NatureBox for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, which is Ralph Garman. Ralph and I go way, way, way back to the K-Rock days. I worked at K-Rock in the 1900s, so I've known Ralph forever. And Ralph, as I'm sure you know, does Hollywood Babylon with Kevin Smith. They do that live at the Hollywood Improv. If you go to improv.com, you can get dates and tickets and follow Ralph Garman, RALPHGARMAN, on the tweets. Here's another podcast number 537 with my old pal Ralph Garman.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Poor Ralph Garman does not deserve to wait this long to start a podcast. I am outraged at myself, Ralph.
As you should be, because frankly, you'll be hearing from my people.
What? Which people?
The people.
Like lawyers or representatives, or like you actually have an indigenous people?
All of them, yeah. I have a little island that I've been raising people, and I'm going to bring them to meet you.
Well, lawyers? Island of lawyers? welcome to the podcast. This is an amazing podcast mashup podcast.
Yes, this is. This is like a superhero team up. One of those comic books where like, there's a crossover between.
Now, would you say that this is like a DC Marvel crossover? Would you say this is like within the same, like we're within the Marvel universe, we're crossing over
characters? I think it's a big one. I think it's like DC Marvel. It's like Avengers meets X-Men or Justice League kind of thing. So
they just meet. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hey,
how you doing? You got crazy powers too? Yeah, me too. All
right, we'll sit down and have coffee.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll see you guys later. Ralph, I don't know if a lot of people know that Ralph and I have known each other since the K-Rock. Well, you're still in the K-Rock days.
Yes, but I never got out. You made a break for it. You got over the wall, and I am still stuck behind the Iron Curtain.
Well, I think I was sort of, for me with K-Rock, it was sort of like, you can stay here, but you're going to work the overnight shift forever. I was like, I don't think I can stay up
That's
on that
not
anymore.
Fun. Yeah. No, I guess we really got to know each other when you were working with Cortland, when you guys had your own show.
That's right. Cortland Cox, who had been a producer
on... one morning show.
That's what we called it.
Yes, you did.
Well, initially, it was the untitled Hardwick Cox Project.
That's right.
For like almost a year.
And then the jokes got unbearable.
And then it got unbearable.
All the penis jokes just
so
ran their route.
So many of them. We had a porn star come in, and I can't remember what her name was, but we had her record some station IDs for us, and she could not say Hardwick Cox Project. She kept saying... You're listening to the Untitled Hardwick Cock Project.
Well, that's what she was working on at the time, so she got confused.
It's just her regional dialect, Chris. She can't help it.
But it happened, like, it happened more than once, and it was, I mean, and we just let it go. Like, yeah. Finally, the spine of me being going, it's actually Cox, and she was like, Cox Project.
But she's in a room with Hardwick and Cox.
I know.
It's the first time her name has ever been the most reasonable one in any room ever. But, and she was like Lana Labia or something, and she actually had a normal name.
It's a very clinical porn name.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well, yeah. She was a smart girl.
I'm Felicia Fochette.
Vanessa Vulva.
I am Gilda G. Spot. Gilda Spot. My name is Gilda Spot. The G's for Gilda. Good. I'm glad I worked that out loud. Then at a certain point we started calling it the number, and this was the 98. At a certain point we started calling it the number one morning show. Because it occurred to us that no one really had to fact check that.
That's
and
right.
It was just a name. So then we called it the number one morning show, and people would call in and go, congratulations, man! And we're like, no, we're way in last place. not just our competition was like, you know, if there had been like a Korean bingo radio station, like we would have been in competition with that. Like Y107...
A specific station.
Well, there was a Korean station like group like up the hill from us where we recorded where we did the show in Pasadena.
Oh, okay.
So we always assumed that they would take us over, but the Latino groups got us.
That's right, as they do.
Yep.
Well, it's Los Angeles, you know. They have a lion's share of the market.
I could not help but notice your radio station is going down.
I cannot help it. We have a suitcase full of $20 bills for you.
We may offer you solace, my friend.
Do not mind the cocaine that is on them.
So I got out, and then they stuck around for a little bit longer, and yeah. That was that. But
and then we buried you.
K-Rock crushed you.
K-Rock
upstart alternative stations.
K-Rock crushes everyone. I mean, it's sort of every once in a while a new format will pop up in Los Angeles, and then just
98.7 got taken out. They lasted a little bit
already.
They're still around.
No, but they're not hard rock anymore. They're alt rock.
Yes.
So it's like softer. It's just they're not
that's
bothering.
That's kind of like K-Rock is now too. I mean, nobody's really hard rock anymore.
No, but like there is it's like not aggressive at all. There's no stuff that even like leans towards punk. Like I haven't heard any like Social Distortion, for example.
Oh, really?
Which is K-Rock's baby.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Without them and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we'd have no music at all.
Well, you got Green Day.
That's true. We have Green Day.
You got the Green Day and the Beastie Boys.
You got that Dramarama.
You got the Dramarama.
Anything. You can hear that every morning.
Most requested song of all time. Thanks, Rodney.
The other Chris Carter.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
How long is Rodney's show now? Is it like is it 5 minutes?
Rodney Bingenheimer, the legend, yeah. The legendary mayor of Sunset Strip.
Yeah, that they keep on kind of. It's
they
like,
do.
Hey,
they've
Rodney,
whittled him down to 8 minutes on Sunday night now, in between an adult circumcision commercial. And, no, he is.
How many Donna songs can he play in that specific amount of time?
Oh wow! Yeah.
All right, the Bangles coming up next. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Is that a hop?
Still really, right? You're going to play like a female-fronted band? Oh, wow, I didn't think about
no,
it.
No, look at that. There's a girl in that band. What are the odds?
Well, see you, Cantors.
Yeah. He's a legend.
He is.
That shows you what the state of radio was in Los Angeles in the 70s.
But he had like his own club. What's crazy is that that little man with the weird hair was like running the show.
Yeah.
There was a fun group. I remember when I was at K-Rock, it was Rodney and Jason Bentley was there,
yeah.
Doing some more electronic stuff.
Oh, wow. Like in the 90s. So he started K-Rock and then he went to KCRW?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then Native Wayne.
Oh, yes, Native Wayne.
Native Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
With the Native Surf Wayne. Report. Native Wayne would do the reggae show, Reggae Revolution. And then who else was there? Boogerman was course. There. Jed the Fish. Where's Jed?
Tammy
now?
Heidi.
Jed's at the new Northridge station. It's a 80 KCSN. Is that it? It's a Northridge college station, but they're trying to take on KCRW.
Oh, nice.
So they have Nick Harcourt.
Wow.
And they have Jed the Fish, and like a couple like. What's the guy that did Steve Jones's show? Shovel. Mark Shovel or some of that? He was a programmer for Indy 103. He's over there now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I would assume Jed would just show up in a cryogenic chamber somewhere. They would just have put him in some sort of tube. Just put him aside and then thawed him out once in a while and see what's going on.
Let's see.
Tammy Heidi.
Tammy Heidi, who I loved. And is Kat still? Is Kat Corbett?
Kat Corbett is still with us. Yeah, she does a show after ours in the morning.
Oh, Kat's great. Yeah, it was a fun time to be there. And I feel like two great times, I think, to be at K-Rock would have been in the 80s, like the mid-80s. Like when they're just breaking all sorts of cool stuff.
The Dramarama era.
And that's right. And then mid-90s when they were,
And they invented grunge.
Totally. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really, really liked working there at the time. But yeah, the overnight shifts fucking killed me. I mean, it was just after a while, midnight to five.
The hours, it's hard to complain about a gig, but overnights are brutal in radio. And then we were talking about, before you got here, mornings are just, I've been tired now for almost 15 years. You just never get used to it. At least I don't.
No. And what I remember from doing morning radio is that on the weekends, you're like, okay, I don't have to get up tomorrow morning. What time is it? 7 o'clock? Snore. Like you're just out at an unreasonable hour, like a ridiculous hour.
Around Sunday night, you just start to feel like you've got your bearings back, and then it starts all over again.
When I stopped working in morning radio, there was a good month to 6 weeks where I would wake up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and be like, I'm late, and then have to calm my heart back down. Because it's not a job you can really be late for.
No, that microphone goes on whether you're there or not. And, it helps if you're there to say something, because if you're not, then you're screwed. But I mean, that's the nice thing about me. I've had the best of both worlds because I work with these two guys, Kevin and Bean, and it's really their show, and their names are on the door, and they're the guy. And I get to come in and do little funny, silly things, and people like it. And then, I can reap all the benefits without bearing much of the responsibility, which is nice.
Which is nice. That is nice. It is always fun to be you get to be the wacky guy that comes in. Oh,
I get to be Kramer, I open the door and Jerry, and I do that, and I do some shtick, and I'm out the door again, and then they got
to
carry.
Hopefully, you don't go say something horribly racist somewhere, and then it's Kramer. Yeah. Kramer.
I've kept the N words to the minimum on that show. Really, I should be applauded. I think
more than five per hour.
Really, I keep it way down.
But then, so when did you start doing Babylon?
Well, Kevin Smith was always coming in as a guest on the show, promoting, whatever he had going on, Clerks 2 or this, that, or the thing. And every time Kevin would come in, we would hole up in a corner and just geek out together. So we spoke the same language, and we became friends. And I guess after a couple years of being friends, we start saying, we've never worked together. We should do something together. And I do a recurring bit on the morning show where I do entertainment news called the Showbiz Beat. Yes. And it's a skewed sort of vaguely factual entertainment news report where I make fun of people. And whenever he came in to promote, I would always have him stick around because he would sit in and we'd riff and have a good time. And the chemistry was obviously there. So he had just he had been doing Smodcast for a while, and he had got himself a little storefront theater on Santa Monica.
Yeah, it was great. The complex.
Smodcastle.
Yeah, Smodcastle.
Smodcastle. Yeah. And so it was his own theater, and he said, I want to start doing more stuff. I want to start expanding. I'm going to do a podcast with Jason Mewes, and we're going to talk about our careers together and our friendship and stuff. And he said, I want to add something else. He said, maybe we could do something. And I said, that's a great idea. I said, why don't we at least start with what we do when you come on, which is just riff about entertainment news and movies and television and pop culture, which is something we both sort of obsess about, and comics and, sci-fi and do what we were doing in 5-minute chunks on the radio, but in long form.
Yeah.
And so that's what it was. We started doing it 3 years ago. I guess we started doing it at Smodcastle, and it was a little 50-seater, and we would sell out every week. And it was the only podcast really that had that kind of audience. Largely because of Kevin's fans, of course, but then also people from K-Rock would want to listen to what we were talking about. So we said, let's find a new venue. And then we went up to a place up at Universal Studios, and then that didn't go well. And then we moved to the Improv. So that's where we are now, every Friday night in front of a live audience at the Improv. We did the late show there. And it's just been crazy. It's grown into something which is more than just entertainment news. We do bits now and voices and recurring segments. And we're starting to travel with it. And we're going to the UK this summer to do some shows over there and stuff. And
oh, that's great.
It's like this little thing we did just for us that has grown into something that actually became something.
It's almost like radio is the hobby now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I spent a lot of time during the week sort of prepping and getting ready for that show on Friday night because it's in front of a live audience, and you know how different the dynamic is of being in front of a microphone versus hearing the laughs and really having to entertain people. So the pressure is on for that, but we just have such a good time doing it.
That's right. Yeah, that's always the funnest stuff where you were doing it for fun. Like, there was no other – it's like this is going to be a thing someday.
Yeah, there was no goal. There was no end game. It was just – we had never worked together, and it was just something we wanted to do for each other just because we laugh around each other.
Yeah,
And people got on board and started listening, so it's been a blast.
And so what are the big entertainment stories this week?
Well, just Bieber's the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, just every day he's got something more insane. He's becoming almost a fictional character. You would have to put him in a Christopher Guest movie, I think, to really make it believable at this point, because today we were doing the story about how his private plane that he took to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, full of weed. Hotbox.
The pilots had to wear oxygen masks while they were flying the plane because the pot smoke was so thick. And not only were they concerned about, flying a small jet plane while you're stoned, but they were afraid, if you get drug tested, which they do randomly, pilots, and you come up positive, they pull your ticket. So they were actually had the gas.
Wait, I'm Bieber's pilot. All right, you're free to go.
oxygen masks on, and the stewardess was quoted as saying that she was afraid of Bieber and his dad, so she would linger by the pilots and stay out of the main compartment because she was concerned about her well-being.
Wait, so his dad's like hanging out for all this stuff?
His dad is a big-time enabler.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
His dad was the one who was cordoning off the ends of the street when he was drag racing in Miami Beach. He was the one who was holding up traffic.
Yeah, because he gets a ton of free teen pussy. I mean,
his son
is a cash cow and an ass cow. It didn't really come out right. What an ass cow.
What an ass cow.
But you see Bieber's dad, he's got the flat-billed hat, he's got the wife beater on, he's all tatted up. He looks just like a hanger-on. It's just embarrassing.
Let him ride it. Like, it's, he had to put up with that kid, in his room playing songs on YouTube, and now it's working out for him.
I don't think he was even there for that. I think he left the mother early on.
I can let people do whatever the fuck he wants.
So he came back in the picture only when the money started to flow. I get the sense.
Which one? The one that looks like a girl? Fucking A, I'm coming back.
Yeah. Come on, son, let's go out and get tattoos together.
Mm-hmm. Son, I couldn't help but notice you're a big star now with a bunch of money, and it really made me realize how much I love you.
You gotta need help, right, son? Who's gonna wrangle all that? Yeah. That all those Brazilian hookers.
You're gonna need beer. Exactly. Someone's gonna buy you beer. Yeah, right.
You're underage.
What I show him culture. I took him to that little girl Holocaust memorial.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, man.
Son, he's not even Southern. I don't know. Why we made that.
Well, no, they're like, aren't they kind of rural Canada? That accent.
I don't think rural Canadians
talk
that way.
Doesn't sound like the South.
Not so much. But
come on, eh?
Yeah, but that accent, like that old
Poutine.
David Crossbit, where he's like, fuck you, man, I'm from Bakersfield, California. Fuck you, I'm from Wyoming. anywhere you go, it's just the rural accent.
Kids should not have access to large sums of money. That is not a time in your life where you should have access to a king's ransom of wealth.
It never works out well.
No.
It's hard enough to handle a lot of money if you're responsible.
Right.
Much less if you're going through that period where you're doing a bunch of dumb shit that can only be made worse by having unlimited gold.
Yes.
So it's... I almost feel like it just shouldn't be legally allowed. Like, you cannot have money until you're at least,
They should put it in some sort of account or something, and then, wait until you're 25 to give you the password.
Well, you hear, the story, whenever you hear, like a well-adjusted child actor, they'll go, how did you say so? It's like, well, my parents, put all the money away.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get it till way later. You're like, oh, it's really the parents.
Yes.
And they were normal, and they taught us, special value.
Like Elijah Wood, he said, his parents were very adamant about, him having, a real normal life, and they didn't really spend a lot of the money he was making. And so then it works out. The guy's like a normal dude.
No, bad teen and child stars have the same exact parents as murderers. Yeah. If you look at those two life stories and you follow them, you follow them, there's parallel lines drawn between parents who don't really give a shit what their kids are doing, or looking for an easy score, or looking for quick cash, don't put their child's welfare in front of their own. I mean, invariably.
Your dad shouldn't be your bro. You shouldn't have a bro dad.
Like, yeah, same with like girls and moms. It's like, we're like best friends. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be. You should tell her how things are.
If your parents aren't embarrassing you, they're not doing their job.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And not embarrassing you in the sense where they're like, where are we going tonight? Like, how much pussy are we getting tonight? No, come on, please.
It's all right. We'll tell your friends' parents. You guys can do whatever you want in here.
It's not just Bieber, but it's just this crazy little like pack of lost boys that, you know, are just running around chomping on stripper tits and doing drugs and throwing eggs at people.
It's fucking, you know, they grew, it's like these kids literally kind of like probably grew up watching Entourage and now they just want to.
Yes. I'll tell you.
Yeah, we watched it ironically because it was like we're like making fun of the people that we hate.
I'm like Turtle.
Yeah.
They're debating on who gets to be Turtle.
Who gets to be Turtle?
No, dude, I'm Turtle.
That's the reality.
You're so Johnny Drama. You take that back.
So why'd you guys stop being friends? Called me Drama. Seems a bit dramatic.
Oh, it's Turtle-rific. You can almost hear the boners popping in like the media for the meteoric crash to Earth that's going to happen with that kid. That's definitely going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bummer. And I hope that it's not as bad as it could be. You know, like I hope it's just, well, I lost a lot of my money and I had to learn the value of, you know, friendship and life. And, you know,
but now I'm a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, exactly.
You hope he ends up like Vanilla Ice where he's rehabbing houses but making a living? Is that what you're
saying? He's got like a cool guy. Like, he's like, oh, I was a fuck-up, but I was just a kid. What are you going to do? And not.
Once, when I was at E! At the Soup, I made a sketch. A sketch with a Vanilla Ice where like he wanted to change his sound again and he wanted to do like acoustic hipstery type music. But then like I threw in a joke. I was like, he's like, you know, once this record comes out on Matador, it's going to like, you know, do really well. And I'm going to come out with my own ice trays called Ice Ice Baby Makers. And then like he's like, ha, oh, you knew about that? I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I put out ice cube trays. No. Yeah, he did it like he says, like I did it like when there was nothing else going on, and I just put my name on some ice trays. And I was like, did they sell? He's like, no, they didn't.
No, because everyone has ice makers in the refrigerators.
It turns out that ice does not retain any particular shape for a long period of time.
No one really uses the trays any longer.
Although I do have the Han and Carbonite ice trays.
Of course you
do. Which are a lot of fun.
Yeah. So it's it's on the bottom. Like the design's on the bottom.
Yeah, the design's on the bottom. So when you pop it out, then you got Han there.
And then what do you put that in?
Scotch.
What? What do you put that in?
I don't ever use them.
I just look at them.
Yeah.
They're mint in box, dude. Yeah. You don't take them out.
When you like...
Ruin it.
If you're a nerd culture person, I find that a lot of what you own are things that you could use at some point, but never do.
I just did a purge.
Did you purge?
Yeah, I just like got rid of a bunch of just stuff. Like I was just like, this is just stuff. I don't.
So once a year, no laws, anything's okay until.
Yeah, exactly. I killed my wife. I killed her.
It was fine though. It was during the purge.
It was during the purge.
Yeah,
but now I got to deal with the body.
No. Well, as long as you dispose of it before the purge is over, it's totally fine. Yeah.
My wife saved my nerd life because I've got my office in the house, and that's mine. But everything else is completely off limits, so I can't put any Batman shit in the kitchen or in the living room or anything else.
What about contained. Classy stuff? What about classy Batman stuff?
No, there's no such thing in my wife's eyes.
No,
because she has actual class versus nerd class. And so she said when we got the house, she said, "This is your room. Enjoy yourself. Do whatever you want, but the door stays closed, and there's nothing else leaking out into the house." So that makes you, it forces you sort of to maintain your collection on a sort of sparse level because you can't just let it go nuts and spread everywhere. So.
Yeah, and you don't want to, like, it's like, I don't want to spend money for, like, a storage space to, like, put stuff in, because then it defeats the purpose.
Or
like,
for a divorce lawyer. There's two things you don't want to spend money on.
I think the blessing and the curse is that my girlfriend is actually worse than I am about that stuff, so I'm like, oh, I should probably get this portal gun. She's like, why not get five? Like,
yeah.
We can make a mobile for the dining room.
Exactly.
When Dee and I first moved in with each other, we both had all of the trade paperbacks for Walking Dead, and there was like a conversation like, well, whose do we get rid of? because we just can't have both.
Oh my god!
And then it was
how
just
do you
like
merge the collection.
Yeah, it was a real weird like. I was like, and then like I just realized like it does like it kept on telling myself it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make, but like you remember,
but
when
you know
you
that's a lie.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. And so we just held on to.
Yeah, both
just
of them
still there, just like a fucking 1-1
dual
two,
libraries,
3-3, 4-4 all the way down the line.
You didn't mix them together, did you? They're never gonna know who's who's.
I know, but that's what marriage is, Chris.
It's consolidating.
Not knowing where you start or end, and
no,
you're just miserable.
No,
this is such a modern phenomenon. The nerd girl, by the way, that you marry. They were so few and far between when I was coming up in my nerddom. You know,
I
went to a con and there was no women anywhere, and they and the ones that were there certainly weren't hot. And there was no cosplay, and they didn't you didn't lust after them. You know, girls were something you hid your nerddom from.
Yeah.
Now that you're embracing it and meeting women who share it,
I have to say that in my experience, it was, you know, there was maybe one girl in our chess club, and it was like, you know, nine guys, and then computer lab, and then with video games, and it just at the time it was just more of an early adoptery thing. I don't know. I mean, like not just women, but like all types of people are into nerd shit now. All types of people.
Yeah, well.
And at the time, it was a very, very, very specific. It was a very specific experience, and so it, you know, it did change. But it's so much of that stuff. You know, people from our generation grew up and started putting that out in the world, like just sort of re-expressing it for the masses. And so now it's
mainstream pop culture.
Yeah, exactly. Now it is all the non-Kardashian sectors of pop culture.
Yeah.
Which I'm fine with. I don't mind. I'm not like a nerd elitist in the way where I go, no new people. That guy doesn't seem like he should be a, what's she doing? What the fuck? It's like, great. Great. There's more stuff.
Yeah.
There's more stuff we get to consume. Stuff that's better produced.
And more people I can talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was ashamed. I was like, a guy was like, are you kind of bummed out? Because I've always, like, since I was a kid, a huge zombie fan. And, like, he's like, are you kind of bummed out that it's, like, the big thing? And I was like, no, because there's a ton more for me to watch now. I don't understand why you would think I'd be bummed out about it.
People hate it when the thing that is very personal to them all of a sudden becomes mainstream because they don't want to have anything in common with everyone else.
But that's just, like, then they're not, like, is that the question? Or do they really enjoy it, or are they just using it as an identity?
I think it's both, but largely it's, you know, the identity thing of, like, you know, well, I don't want to have anything in common with those. I don't want to have anything in common with the kids who watch American Idol. Fuck them, because that means transitively that I'm not going to be part of. You know,
those are the kids that stuffed me in a locker when I was in high school.
Yeah.
I think they do identify their sort of solitude with whatever it is that they're into, and once that goes away, then they feel like they're being homogenized. It's that hipster music thing. You know, they don't like the band.
Totally, yeah,
once it's being played on radio, then it loses all allure.
Yeah. It is funny though, because it still happens. Though, like my neighbor got this like old like Range Rover, like a '60s Range Rover, and I was like, "Hey, that's really cool, man. It's like a good zombie mobile." And he's like, "What's that?" I was like, "It's a good, you know, like, for the zombie apocalypse." He's like, "Apocalypse?" And I was
like, is that like the polar vortex?
Yeah. It's like, See you on trash day. See you on trash day. It's the worst. Like, it's like, you know, in this day and age, it is rare that you have that nerd shame where you're just like, you like confidently make a reference to someone. What is that? You're like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, but comics,
nothing.
As comics, you know, like, it's not just enough growing up in that way, but also having the comic gene too makes all of that way worse when you realize that, you know, most people don't say horrible, ridiculous things in a conversation.
Yeah. Most people are socially acceptable.
Yeah, exactly. So you feel like you kind of got it from both ends.
Yeah.
You know, you're either not going to get the references, or you're not going to understand why I just, you know, like, why I was just like, oh, those nuns are cunts, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
What? I was kidding.
Well,
they're obviously not. Yeah. I was just, yeah.
Yeah. Ugh.
They're cunt nuns. Cunt nuns.
From Nabisco. Try new chocolate cunt nuns.
Well, no, cunt nuns would be black and white cookies.
Well, I guess they would. Yeah. Yeah, I guess they
would. Don't get into the habit.
New fruit flavored cunt nuns.
some good punning.
Yeah.
Good pun.
Yeah, I just saw Oreos has Rice Krispie treat flavored Oreos now.
What?
I just saw it on Instagram.
Rice Krispie treat flavored.
I'm trying to wrap
Oreos.
My brain around that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, you know, because of science, you could just make something taste like something.
Right. Yeah, but I'm still trying to wrap my brain around. Is it? Are there Krispies in the Oreo cream?
No, it just tastes like it.
The cream tastes like it.
Yeah, I believe the cream tastes like it. I don't know.
Rice Krispies.
You know what? Don't come in here half-assed, right? Have your facts or don't.
Guys, my eyes can't taste. If they could, I could describe it for you, but they can't.
Oh, sounds like we'll a Taylor Swift song. My eyes can't taste.
My eyes can't taste what you're feeding me.
Who's that? Who's that?
Tastes a lot like cum.
Who's that?
That's Taylor Swift. Oh, yeah. Yep. It's Jonathan Swift. It's Jonathan Swift.
Oh, no.
Who wrote Gulliver's Travels.
Ralph's people, your background is sketch comedy.
Yeah, sketch and improv. That's how I got started in this town.
Were you at Acme the same as Carolla? Is
yeah.
that where you guys were together?
That's with Cortland too. Cortland Cox, Adam Carolla, a bunch of very funny people came out of Acme Comedy Theater. We were sort of the redheaded stepchild to the Groundlings. The Groundling was the big monster in town, and
yeah.
some people who had been there and didn't care for sort of how they operated did an offshoot and started this theater, the Acme Comedy Theater.
That was before I.O. moved to town?
Way before.
Yeah,
there was
yeah.
only two of us in town, really. It was Groundlings and Acme at the
oh,
time.
Shit.
That was it. Maybe Second City might have had some presence.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were right next to the Improv.
But that it was that. Still Acme still predates all that. Like, Second City plopped in, like, maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And, and then
Acme's been around there for
really
20,
work.
Better than 20.
Yeah, Acme, oh, okay. Acme's been around. But then now it's not Acme anymore.
I don't know.
It's in this kind of weird... It changed hands.
Yeah,
and
I think they still have the physical space on La Brea, but I think the theater has moved back to North Hollywood or something. I'm not really sure of the dynamics.
Yeah, there were a lot of really funny, like Shane Nickerson was through the Acme, and Will Wheaton did a bunch of stuff at the Acme.
Yeah.
And
Brett Baron, Dave Finkel, who I came up with at Acme, they're the showrunners now in New Girl now. You know?
Oh, so, nice.
A lot of guys that I sort of came up with got either into animation or sitcom writing or something else. They're not a lot of performers, but are stayed in the business one way or the other. And Paul Rugg, who was Freakazoid, if you know that show.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
used to write with all the Animaniacs crew and Paul McCann and all those guys. They were all original Acme members. And they kind of took over that regeneration of the Warner Brothers product with animation back in the 90s.
Oh, you know, Tiny Toons.
Tiny Toons and Animaniacs and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
what was the form of improv there?
It was primarily sketch.
Oh, okay.
With some improv sort of sprinkled in.
Okay,
you
cool.
know? So... So most of us were actors and writers at the time, and we were just, you know, just cranking stuff out and putting it up to various degrees of success.
It was a weekly show?
Yeah, we would do it every week, actually twice, Friday and Saturday show. And then, you know, the show, once we honed it, would run for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and then we'd be workshopping new material and then put up a whole new show. So
oh, cool.
We did, you know, 4 or 5 new shows a year. And it was a blast. It was still some of the best times I've ever had in my life, both creatively and sort of in fun. And that's the nice thing about being sort of rich, poor and young, is that...
Oh, the opposite.
Yeah, the opposite of what
make
I just
it
said.
Make it, man.
Is that you can do that stuff and you don't mind, you know, not making a buck, and everybody was sort of struggling and it was a very creative time. So, yeah, that's what I started with, sketch and improv. And then through Acme is how I met Jimmy Kimmel, who had become friends with Adam Carolla. And when they decided to go off to do the Man Show, that's when the opening on the Kevin and Bean Show sort of presented. Mm. And Kevin and Bean went to Jimmy Kimmel and said, do you know anybody who can do voices or write comedy or, you know, do the kind of stuff that you do for us? And he said, yeah, Ralph Garman would be good. So we met, and Kevin and Bean said, do you have any radio experience? And I said, I listened to it. I said, but no, it's nothing I really ever wanted to do. And they said, well, we're looking for somebody who really has some radio experience, because Jimmy had started in radio. And I said, well, look, I need a job, and you need a guy. So let's, you know, make a temporary arrangement. And when you find somebody better, then, you know, I'll graciously exit. And that was supposed to be like a 3-month deal, and you know, it's almost 15 years later.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just fall into something that you had no anticipation.
Do they give you the Dread Pirate Roberts? Good night, Ralph. I'll most likely kill you in the morning.
That's right.
I'll most likely fire you in the morning.
That's right. No, I think I'm in now. I got a contract. I think I'll be around
okay,
for
good.
A while. Yeah.
All right, okay,
so you can start it off that way, though. Like, we'll give you $5 a day, and you can't talk to anyone. And you know, it was very awkward. But
did you kind of like the idea of it, though, because you would be done in the day and time to go on auditions?
Yeah, actually, it was like the great straight job. You know, I had been bartending nights previous, so it was the same thing, only the hours were reversed. I knew I could free up.
Yeah.
And early on, you know, they didn't care whether I stayed or went, as long as I generated some material each week. So I could go off for a couple of days and shoot something. And it's a little harder now because I'm sort of a recurring member of the
yeah,
troupe.
And it's not the job that you think it's going to be. Morning radio is, in your head, you go...
Well, is it like three, four hours a day?
Yeah,
like,
knock
then,
that out.
Then you forget, like, you have to come in and prep for the show. You have to do the actual show. You have to do, like, post-show stuff. I mean, it really
production
is.
Production stuff. You're recording things. You're cutting
stuff
out.
It's like an 8-9 hour day. It's just that you're done by, like, one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you've already worked 9 hours by the time people are having lunch, and it's weird.
And your friends are wondering why you're tired at 3 in the afternoon.
It is. Oh, it's almost like what I imagine it felt like to be Rufus Sewell in Dark City, where there's just this kind of like weird vibe, this weird glaze over the world, and you can't quite put your finger on it. You're like, God, it's just, I don't know. I fit in weird here. I don't
know. Out of sync.
Yeah, you're a little out of sync with everybody else. It's really strange. I could only do it for a year, and then I just couldn't. I started to go crazy.
Well, also, like, I mean, you were still drinking around that time, right?
I was.
So was that like would you just start drinking earlier, then go to sleep earlier, like?
Yeah,
not to say that
because
you're a social guy. Like, how did it affect your social?
But we would go get drinks at like 11 or 12,
right?
Because by that time, that was like our 5 o'clock.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it was
happy hour.
It was kind of a weird. It was just kind of a weird time. And then I would have a few drinks. I walked to this place at the end of my street and would have dinner there almost every night at like 7 or 8 o'clock. I'd have like, you know, 4 or 5 beers or whatever, and then just go back and fall asleep by 9:30 or 10 at the latest, because I had to get up at 3:30 or 4 to, you know, because fucking, oh man, how the fuck do you do it?
I'm made of stronger stuff than you are, Chris. That's all I'm saying. I'm just a little bit better than you are.
I think you are.
That's all.
I always love seeing you at Comic-Con too, because I feel like, you know, there's a couple of us who are in the game of like, you know, who's going to moderate what this year?
Yeah,
it's so fun to see. There's just a hand. There's really kind of like a with the occasional like, oh, they just brought their own guy for that thing. But there really are a handful of us who just kind of cover them, and it's kind of, I don't know. I feel like we're in this really neat little society.
But it's expanding though. More people are being added all the time, which makes me upset.
We must crush them.
That's right.
We must crush them.
But yeah, it is. I just lost one of my favorite gigs. I used to do Dexter every year, and now that's gone. So I've got some free time.
Well, you know,
so
to do a panel for it after that last season, how would
that's
you?
True. I might have dodged a bullet.
I think you should just go back and do it every year, even without the cast or the producers.
Right, just
like,
me by myself outside of the bullhorn.
We're not going to focus our second hour on the beard. At the end of the
Lumberjack Dexter will be today's topic.
Yeah, he's still cutting things into pieces. If you,
burying wood out in the water.
Yeah.
What are you excited about TV wise this year?
You know, I'm in love with The Blacklist. I just can't get enough of that.
I've heard it's really good.
Spader's
great, but I haven't seen it.
It's all very. Subjective, but I think it's one of the best shows I've seen in a long time.
Really?
Yeah. The production values and the scripts and the sort of the dark nature of it for mainstream television, I think it's really a great show. So that's sort of my new addiction.
Did you get into I watched the first episode of The Following, and like I was like, it seems like it could be something, but then didn't, you know, that thing, that extra little thing that doesn't make you go like, you, all of a sudden, it's like 4 weeks. You're like, oh, we never really caught up with it.
You're going on a date with a pretty girl, but you're still just not falling in love.
Yeah.
You know? You're just, I felt the same way about The Following. I think it's a well-done show, but it just never hooked me.
Yeah.
Helix, I like. Are you guys watching Helix on Sci-Fi?
I just downloaded the first three episodes, but I haven't watched them yet.
That's real involving stuff. I thought that was great.
You see The Following, the French show?
The Following?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. The Return.
Just let The Following go, man. You're obsessed.
Guys. Bacon needs it.
Well, Ralph, what about The Following?
Yeah.
Now that show is good.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the one I was talking about. It's not better than The Following, but
no. Yeah. The Following lost me early on, but The Following?
It's a good derivative of The Following.
I thought so too.
Are you guys following me?
The Returned. It's a French show you can see on Amazon Prime, and it's just gorgeous and
moody. Amazon Prime.
Prime.
But
in French?
Yes,
that's a lot of work. That sounds like a lot of work.
It's not so bad. It's so moody. There's not much talking.
Okay, all right.
But it's I think if you like the kind of it's really just gorgeously shot. It has this kind of supernatural element, but without really, you know, revealing too much. There is that little bit of a fear. There's always that little lost fear you have. You're like, it's like, if I invest in like these fantasies, is it going to pay off for me?
Yeah.
And that's, but it's like, you don't care because the journey of that show is just so crazy.
Well, that's the important thing is that we have to, you know, you got to remember on a show that it is about the journey, because in the life of a show, if it runs a long time, it's going to change hands potentially with showrunners. Yeah. I mean, you know, Breaking Bad never lost Vince. So right, it's just, it had his voice, like it had him all the way through. It wasn't like, you know, people complain about Dexter or, you know, or any of the other, almost any other show. It just, showrunners swap out.
Because the guy comes in, he's like, this is going to be my take on it.
Right, yeah, exactly. Let's fuck everything else that happened there. We're going to do it this way. And then, there's stylistically, the show's not consistent, or story-wise, the shows aren't consistent. There's not one thing that goes all the way. It's not self-contained, but so I think we just have to enjoy the journey. There's so few shows where you don't go, oh, but season three wasn't great, you know.
Yeah, there's always lulls, and there's always peaks and valleys, and I find myself now responding more to sort of performers than I do story and scripts anyway, because they will fluctuate. But if you fall in love, like you said, Spader's great in Blacklist. He is. And this Megan Boone, who's his co-star in that, she's I never knew who she was before, but I think she's terrific in it. And if you can invest in those people, Michael C. Hall was that way from your Dexter. You know, even in the worst of Dexter, I just think he's just terrific.
And he's great.
I always enjoyed being on the ride with him, you know. So I find myself, maybe because I'm a performer at heart, but I always respond to that stuff more than anything.
I think the performances in that Return show,
what's the premise?
It's this French Alpine town that one day people that had died in the past just show back up, and they don't know why, and no one knows why.
Sounds like Resurrection. They're bringing to ABC the same premise.
I think it's the American remake, the American version. Yeah.
Well, then it's going to be better because it's American.
Fucking A, right?
USA.
Yeah, because
USA.
The American version of the bridge.
Explosions.
That's right.
American version of the bridge. So much better.
So much better.
So much better.
Kurtwood Smith.
Yeah.
We got him. Just give me my fucking phone call.
But yeah, so it's they just show up and no one knows really why. And they're in the exact same age that they were when they died. So like people from a long time ago in different cases. And it's just the way it affects the entire town.
Purgatory.
Is it purgatory? That's your just go to.
Dexter was in purgatory.
Just going to fire an arrow.
Purgatory.
Yeah.
Lena Dunham's in purgatory.
Everyone's dead. It's purgatory.
Dream sequence.
God damn it.
Yeah.
It's fucking purgatory. That's what it has to be.
I feel bad for people who are trying to put new fantasy and sci-fi stuff on television now, because there's been such a glut and we've been spoiled by so much good work now.
Yeah.
But if you're going to bring something, you know, you're making fun of Lost, but at the time Lost was revolutionary.
I still like Lost, and I didn't mind the ending. I like it. It was just, for some reason, people just get so angry when you just, like, you go, I like Lost. They go, but that Lassie. You go, how dare you? All the joy it brought you for years, you loved it.
Not enough joy.
Yeah.
I feel they owe me.
Yeah. That's why I hate, like, the idea of, like, a spoiler alert, like, where people, it's like, don't tell me about what happens in Breaking Bad. It's like, do you not trust, does the show have to surprise you for it to be good to you?
Well, can I say something particularly about that show? Is that one of the things about the show was the surprises, like the crazy turns in that show. So I will say that one in particular. Like, there are some shows,
to
like,
to me it was the writing and the performing, but sure, yeah, if it's the crazy twists and turns.
But that was part of it, though. That was really part of it, though, is just, you know, it's the last 5 seconds of the episode, and then all of a sudden, like,
oh, the thing,
the flowers, or whatever.
The only time there's been scary flowers.
The flowers.
You know. Wizard of Oz, though, too. Wizard of Oz had some scary flowers.
Oh, true. And I guess
when
the happening.
Fall asleep in that pot in the poppy fields.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was scary.
The happening.
The happening.
It's the trees.
Hey, look at these trees.
These trees are getting revenge on us left and right.
Don't go down that road. They're all dead.
What? No.
You're not the king of me, tree. I say when I fuck tree.
I'm just mashing up the movies. Yeah. I'm just mashing up Boogie Nights.
Hey, tree, they're so passionate now about television. They take it so personally that I think it's a daunting task. It used to be people would just make television. People would watch it, and then they'd go to work and have families and stuff. And it wasn't dire.
I actually have a theory on that.
Why television fans now are so much more insane?
Yeah, I do. I have a theory on that, because I believe that the methods of media consumption now are so much more intimate than they used to be, that people, it becomes a part of who they, I mean, people have control now. They can pretty much watch anything they want, whenever they want, however they want.
Yeah.
So there's a certain amount of intimacy that's been created in our sort, in our little bubbles, the way that we consume. I mean, television used to just sort of work like, you could maybe record it on VHS, but really, if it didn't hit you in the face when it was on, then that was pretty much it. You know? Yeah. But now we have such ownership. You can own shows. Like, you can own a season of a show. You can own a show and watch it whenever you want. And so yeah. I think because we consume it more intimately, it attaches more. People are just like, my children, you know? Like, really creepy about it.
I think it's cultural, though, too. I think maybe, you know, I'm in the entertainment business, so maybe I shouldn't be biting the hand that feeds me. But I think there's sort of a misplaced weight that's put on entertainment in this country now, on all levels, film and television and movies and internet.
Maybe we can all agree it's more important than teaching and it's more important than charity.
I mean, I don't remember my father when I was growing up saying, don't tell me what happens on Dragnet. I
know they're going to enforce the law, and that's all I know.
That's right. I need to know what Jack Webb is going to do. I mean, he enjoyed the show, loved the show, but he never really, it never got in the way of his life.
Did he say Just the Facts, ma'am?
Oh, great. Oh,
now
thanks.
I know he says Just the Facts, ma'am.
Spoiler alert. You know, Adam 12? I mean, it just never seemed like there was that sort of misplaced obsession, almost to the exclusion of other things. And I don't know whether that is, like you said, because of the delivery system, or whether we have just become a nation of...
spoiled assholes.
Spoiled assholes. Or watchers, you know, where everything is done sort of vicariously, and the watching experience has trumped the doing experience.
It is a drug, though. The... I think as much as we make fun of the spoiler thing, I think it is a weird narcotic. It's a weird social narcotic because people cherish that moment where they get the high of like, oh, this crazy thing, you know, that if you take that away from them, it's like taking someone's fucking coke or, you know, like where you took their drug away from them and they don't get to experience that thing, which was going to be the highlight of their day.
Yeah. Well, if that's the case and people are focused in on that, why is the obsession about finding stuff out early also equally strong? Why do people leak scripts to the internet? Why do they pull video off of the set and pictures that are shot in the bushes of what the new costume looks like for Batman or whatever?
So they love to ride that fence. You know, it's like a Christmas present. You ever do the thing with your parents?
Oh,
like, what'd you get me? Do you really want to tell you? No.
Yeah.
What is it? So you want me to tell you? No. Are you peeking? I'm peeking. Okay. Did you see it? Oh, God damn it, Mom. I just saw it. Why would you do that to me?
All the magic. Dead.
Dead. Yeah. You ruined it.
Dad's
Christmas.
Drunk again. I'm sorry. That was just my house.
Yeah. See what you've done to your father.
A little sense memory exercise. Went wrong.
Oh, thanks. Another six-pack of Bud Light, Dad. Yeah. Well, you're going to have to tackle
smoke up, Johnny.
See this?
Merry Christmas.
I'm glad this is the Christmas I become a man.
But I used to be that way too. I used to be that way with music. Like if a friend of mine's like, hey, I got the new, you know, whatever record, like I'd be like, oh, give it to me. I want to hear it. It comes out next week. I need to hear it now. But like just last week, my friend's like, hey, here's a link to the new Beck. And I was like, I'll wait till it comes out.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You're all grown up.
I know. That's what it was, really that kind of feeling that like I was like, yeah. Let it just happen. I don't need to rush things, you know?
Maybe. Well, especially because it's sort of... I really enjoy the anticipation of things now.
Sometimes it's better.
It is a little bit better. Yeah. There's one of the reasons why I kind of like watching Walking Dead week to week, as opposed to...
to getting all the episodes.
And... It's a daunting task. You know, there are some shows like where I feel like I've just been swept over by the wave of... Like Homeland, I haven't watched yet. Yeah, but I feel like now that we're a few seasons in... Now it's a fucking chore of like, I gotta buckle down and watch these three seasons, you know, like when am I gonna, and I think of it as this thing that I'm gonna have to set aside, you know, like 30 hours for.
You know, Chris, if you never see Homeland, it's okay.
What? It's not okay.
It's okay. It's all right.
No, but you know.
It's just television.
I know it is, but you know with what you and I do. If you haven't seen everything, people are like, what do you mean you haven't seen it? How the fuck are you crazy?
Just bullshit. Just lie. Just find out a few key facts about everything and extrapolate that out and just lie to people.
Just a reference point.
That's
that
right.
Point.
Just be able to throw some buzzwords around and pretend, man.
Oh,
just
she
pretend.
Cries all the time. Ah, yeah, you know exactly what I've never seen an episode of the show. I just know that's what people say.
Oh, or you could girl with her crying jacks.
You can just sort of keep the conversation in the air by just saying like really obvious things about the show. Did you see Homeland?
Claire Danes, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Patinkin, and then when the terrorist says, oh, when he did the thing, it was like, yeah.
Man, I didn't
know. Did you believe when he did that with the Quran? Remember?
What about the finale?
What about that, huh?
Did you see that coming? Yeah, because in the previous episode...
I told you it was going to happen.
I know.
But no, I meant the way they did it.
The end, when he finally died, that was extremely sudden.
Wait, what is that?
Fletch.
That's right, yeah.
Shame about Ed, sure was. Yeah. To go so suddenly like that. Yeah. He was in intensive care for 4 months. I know, but in the very end, when he actually died, that was extremely sudden. I feel like there just aren't any Fletch-type comedies anymore. I don't know. I like that.
By Fletch type comedies, you mean like
one smart ass protagonist?
Like the smart, kind of like smart ass protagonist, really driven by a single guy
with a serious story.
With kind of a serious, like those blockbuster comedies are donut. You know, like the Beverly Hills Cop and the Fletch and
the moments of drama and stuff.
They just don't. You know, those don't. I can't think of one that is right now.
Well, there is like a thing about comedies too. Is like they don't. Like they want it to be so funny that they just forget about like characters and stories so much, where they don't even like let stuff sit that could just be a sweet moment. Like there's in Trading Places with Eddie Murphy and then the butler. Like there's just like this
Denholm Elliott.
Yeah, and there's like a kind of a sweet moment where it's like, you know, like whatever you need. There's like, and they just kind of sit before cutting away.
Yeah,
and that nothing funny happens, but it's great.
Well, you have to have not funny things to know what the funny things are.
You know?
I mean, that's the beauty of really good comedy, is that smart people recognize that you have to have straight moments because that's what pays off the laughs. Well, if you just pack everything with punchline after punchline, you get numb to
it. You need dynamics, right. Pretty much.
It's like special effects in action movies. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can only see robots fight for so long until you actually get a little bored of it.
Yeah. And that's the Seth MacFarlane's the Western movie.
Million Ways to Die in the West?
Yeah, looks like it's just going to be nonstop jokes.
Well, I'll thank you for the lead-in. I'm in that film.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
We talked about that yesterday. I think the movie looks pretty funny.
I think it looks
funny.
Great, but it looks like nonstop. And I'm all for nonstop jokes. Like, it's just like there's movies that are good at that. But, like, it seems like a good opportunity to actually do. And maybe you can tell me more about the movie.
This movie is going to be hilarious. And I've known Seth for about a decade because I do a lot of voices on Family Guy.
Yeah.
I'm in Family Guy every episode. So he was kind enough to put me in Ted. I play Mark Wahlberg's dad in Flashback when the bear first comes to life.
Yeah.
I'm his father.
You're not the king of me, Ralph. I'm the king of me. You're not King Ralph. Starring John Goodman.
Alex Borstein and I were in that, and so he put me in this one too. And I was there, and I'm telling you, it is going to be hilarious, but largely because of what we were talking about, which is there's a real point of view and a real story being told.
There is.
And everything else is being hung on. It's not like Blazing Saddles, you know, it's not just a bunch of jokes about the West.
Just sketches.
Seth is a sly motherfucker, you know, like he didn't try to make the jump to superstar too fast.
No, nope, he was genius.
You know, it's like
the fact that his first big movie, he's like he's just a voice. Yeah, just the voice
of the bear. Yeah. You know, it's like, how about this?
It's okay. Not quite an animation, but it's not really live action either.
Okay, okay. Well, yeah, this is just crazy. I'm just spitballing. What if my face were in this one? You know,
that smile.
Sure.
I mean, if he's able to pull it off, it's going to be, you know. And the truth, I think he will absolutely be able to pull it off. I think. The trailer's really great, and just
trailer,
coming off of Ted, and I think it's gonna do good. I think it's gonna do even like Seth MacFarlane needs more money and jobs.
Yeah. But I think he catches a break.
I think it's I know, seriously. Yeah. God, but poor guy.
What I like about him though is that like it's clear that he loves comedy and he loves jokes and he loves sketches and it's like, you know, like with the type of people he hires, like they're all like so funny. And it's like the fact that he wants to keep on using, the fact that you're in, you know, Family Guy, and then he puts you in the movies too.
He's very loyal to the people that he works with.
But that's like the fun of watching, you know, Christopher Guest movies, because you know it's like he's going to be working with people he likes.
Well, my friend, there's a couple guys who write on Family, actually one of them is now one of the EPs, but he's been there since the beginning.
Alec?
No, a guy named Steve Callahan.
Oh, okay.
Another Acme grad.
Yeah, that's right. Steve Callahan was my orientation counselor at UCLA.
Oh, wow.
And so we were in a stand-up comedy club together, Steve and this other guy named Pat Megan, who also writes on Family Guy.
Yeah, sure. Pat.
And they've been there like forever. And so I think it does say something about a show, like when your writers stick around
for a
long
point.
Time. Because it's, you know,
if it's a toxic environment or if the room sucks or if it's just like then people can't wait to bail and go work on something else.
Yeah, well, like the turnover in The Simpsons is, you know, it's pretty crazy. The amount of guys that are coming
that
around.
Show. I mean, like, I just don't even know how you write for that family anymore. Like, yeah. how do you even possibly?
I don't know.
I mean, it's I don't envy that task of that many episodes.
Yeah,
that's just gonna it's just eating itself at this point.
Are they at a point where Sideshow Mel has had his own episode?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah,
there must be. There must be some sort of a Sideshow Mel origin story.
It must be, something. He just shows up because Bob goes to jail.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. But, like, I love the little peaks of, like, he's, like, clearly, like, an old theater actor.
You know, the funny thing is, in my head, Sideshow Mel is still the new guy.
Yeah. Like that Far Side comic?
Yeah.
Where it's, like, the guy's, like, a thousand, like, notches on the wall, and the other guy just has a little bit less. He's like, stop calling me new guy. Huge beards.
Oh, the fucking Far Side.
Yeah. I don't get it.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
So are you pitching any shows? Or what
always. With no success.
Television is tough.
It is. It's frustrating. But that's the nice thing about having a steady gig is that you don't ever get panicked or desperate, you know? So you do it, and if it...
You have a few good steady gigs.
If something comes up, then great. And if it doesn't, then, well, that's fine. You know, your kids will eat, so it all works out. But Kevin Smith and I were trying to maybe take Hollywood Babylon to television, maybe do a TV version of that.
Oh, cool. It'd be like an entertainment news show, but actually watchable and funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which are none of on television. Yeah, so it would work out that way.
FAP and information.
Right. I mean, we talked about doing an entertainment news show that does not jerk off celebrities, you know, which, again, doesn't exist. But So, and it, you know, who knows if that's going to happen or not. But we got a couple irons in the fire.
Do you worry... You know, about the jokes you make, like the whole like thing that happened with David Spade and the Hollywood Minute, where it's, you know.
All of a sudden he was rubbing elbows with those people and he was like, they're jokes.
Yeah, like he would be horrible to them, like in jokes, because they're just jokes.
Right.
But then he has to like interact with these people or, you know, do you ever find like are you worried that in the showbiz beat you're going to make fun of like a show and then like you see a, oh shit, there's a... Got an audition with them tomorrow.
Well, you know, the nice thing is that I only make fun of people. If I hit them hard, it's people I genuinely don't like and don't condone their behavior or their product or whatever. So if I would run up against them and they had a problem with that, I'd be fine with that. Because I can understand if someone takes a shot at you, you don't like them. But if I don't like them, that I wouldn't want to be friends with them or work with them anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good point.
I never want to be friends with the Kardashians, so that's not going to be a danger. I always felt worse for Kevin because he's a guy who's a director and still will direct. And I said, maybe someday you're going to have someone walk into a room or something that we talk about that's going to cheese you off. But he's always the cuddly one. I'm always the abrasive one anyway. So he's very smart about how he plays that. He's a stoner and I'm a drinker. So that's the dynamic of the show. You know, yeah. I go out there and chew people a new asshole. And he's like, oh, Ralph, come on. Cut him a break.
I got to pick up this. There's asshole all over the ground.
That's right.
Someone's got to clean this up, but I'm too high to do it.
No, it's weird because Seth, who... I'm very close with, and Kevin I'm very close with, they have sort of a contemptuous relationship. And because Smith took some, I think on Clerks, the animated series, they took a shot at Family Guy or something. And so Seth took some shots at Kevin Smith a couple episodes back and everything.
Oh,
so there's a little tension there. So I guess you do run into that once in a while when you're making fun of people. But I think it was Dennis Miller said... When he was doing SNL and he would make fun of people and he would run into people occasionally, he'd say, if they're upset with me, he said, I get it. Nobody likes to be made fun of, but that's also my job, so I can't not do it.
Yeah.
Dennis Miller said, if I run into someone that I made fun of, I just remind them that I'm an asshole.
Yeah. That's right. Cha-cha.
It's like King Tutankhamun coming at you from the fucking backside.
Even that was too much of a reference.
I need another, can we get another king from...
What am I, Ramses over here? What am I, Ptolemy? You guys, I'm excited that we're doing like a Smodcast version of At Midnight.
Yeah, we're very excited about it too.
I was
we're
so excited that it was. I'm happy to claim credit for that idea.
It's pretty smart.
Well, there wasn't anything strategic about the decision. It was just like I really like those guys, and I think I also think that our show, it works especially well when everyone on the panel are buddies.
Yeah.
And so when you guys all know each other, that's like the engine of the show. The game show part of the show is just to get you guys in the same place and interacting. And then all the interaction stuff is really where the show is.
That's what we're looking forward to, is the three of us being on stage and be able just to cut up and have a good time and make fun, you know, of each other as well as you.
It'll be... wait, what? What's that?
That's my favorite part.
What's that?
Well, you know what's so funny is how people try to start... You know, and I like people out in the Twitterverse, people in the audience will try to start shit, and I think they do it because they think they're trying to help and be your buddy. But you know, someone said, Kevin Smith took a shot on Comic Book Man at Hardwick," and I was like, "I'm sure he didn't." I mean, like, I know enough to know, like,
right. You know, he loves you.
It wasn't, you know. And so when I found out what it was, that he basically Kevin said, "Welcome to the only show on AMC not hosted by Chris Hardwick," or something like that.
Right.
Which that was, by the way, a respectful. Like, it was a really fun.
You're saying you work
a lot. Funny.
Which is good.
It was really funny, but there were a handful of people that were determined to like make it a thing. Did you see what he said about you?
Also, he's right. There's two hosted shows on the network.
Right.
His is the other one.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it. I feel like some of that is a little bit of other people just kind of poking and going, "Hey, did you fucking hear anything?"
They love it. I mean, especially on Twitter. They love the beeps.
It's empowering.
You know?
Yeah. It's empowering for a person to, because then you have that other guy's attention. What did that guy say?
Kevin and I left the John Lovitz Comedy Club on bad terms when we left that place up at Universal before we moved to the Improv to do our Hollywood Babylon show. And when you went to do the podcast with Lovitz.
Oh, I saw those
everybody
tweets.
Everybody was
like,
dumping us saying, "What's Hardwick doing? I thought he was your buddy, but he's going to spend
no
time
idea.
With Lovitz." And you had no idea about any of that.
I didn't have any idea. I was totally not
and
up to speed.
We didn't think for a minute that there was any sort of,
so I DM'd Kevin. And I sent Kevin a direct message. And I was like, "Oh my god, I didn't know anything happened, and I just didn't know, you know." But yeah, there were a handful of people that tried to make it. How could you do that to your friends?
Don't
like,
you know what
I wasn't. You know, so I feel like so much of what we do is you know trying to be supportive and friendly and cool, and you know make people happy. And then when still people are like, "How dare you?" Yeah. Like, I didn't. There are actual evil people in the world. I'm just dumb, so I didn't know.
One time, like on my other podcast, you know, like I made fun of like I was making fun of, I love this dumb bit that Corolla does where he's just talking about ketchup packets, and I was like making fun of like all the other small things, like, you know, chopsticks not being able to be pulled apart, like, you know, like all the things he would keep on. And right. I was doing like a silly impression and went down a rabbit hole of it. And it's not like, it wasn't making fun of him, it was just making fun of like how much smaller could you get of like stuff you're getting angry at,
right?
Which is like that's his stick. Yeah. And I loved it, and I was just goofing off, and then there was like these people going, like, tweeting at Chris going, "You better get your boy in check, because he's like, he's taken now. How dare you let that happen? Corolla, like, fucking let you, he got you started." I was like, I don't understand. I was just
making jokes.
Yeah.
He is just ignore everyone all the time.
Yeah.
This is the only answer. The good, the bad, the indifferent, you just can't listen to any of it, because it'll make you insane.
I feel like sometimes, I think we might be at about an hour now. I got the sense. Mm. I've got podcasts. It's funny that you would go on my other podcast, and that's a thing that people say now.
I know. Really. Don't worry. It felt weird.
When I'm with my wife, with my girlfriend, they're very different experiences. So,
I feel like we need to have you back on. I want to hear stories of you and Cordy and those guys all living together, because there was some sort of like... You know, either someone shat in a pool table or dropped a condom in a pool table.
There was a condom in a corner pocket of our pool table at the house. Yeah, after one particularly good party. Yeah.
A new condom.
We were cleaning up the next day, and a used condom was in the corner pocket of the pool table.
Corner pocket.
Yeah. See, that doesn't bother me. People get that reaction. It doesn't bother me at all. I'm glad they were safe. Whatever happened on that table, it happened safely. I think that's a good idea.
That's very considerate of you. Did you have to clean that up?
Yes, I did.
Was it you? Yeah. You picked it up.
Fine.
You picked it up.
We're all humans, man.
Sure,
so it's all good.
Yeah, yeah. And humans shit and bleed and cum and have fluids, and it's gross.
The severed head, that bugged me.
with a used condom in it.
That's that was right. The worst. I just shoved it in the nose. It was weird.
There was one in the neck hole. I don't know what happened. It was a crazy party. It was a totally crazy party.
Yeah, three of us shared that house, and Corolla was not the heavy party guy. Cordy and I were more of the guys who liked to party. So Adam was always had this sort of bemused separate distance, and he would just comment on stuff constantly, you know.
Oh yeah, Cordy was a By the time Courtney and I were working together, he was a refined Guinness drinker.
Yes.
It was very much, oh, yeah, Guinness. Courtney's now working over at 51 Minds, which is Mark Cronin's company that is actually producing my girlfriend's show for Sci-Fi.
See, it all comes around.
It all comes back around.
Why are you staring at me when you say that?
It all comes back around. It all comes back around. Oh my God, all these dead people just came back and they're the same age they were when they died. There must be an explanation for this other purgatory.
That sounds like the following. It sounds like the following.
It's not the following.
Maybe it's the end times.
That bring out the following. Enjoy your following. The following. Well, it's good to see you, man.
And thanks for having me on.
I'm super excited to have you on the show. And I always really enjoy coming back on the Kevin and Bean show.
We love having you.
I thought for the longest time that Kevin and Bean didn't want me on.
Why would you think that?
I don't know. It was just there was a period of like 10 years where I didn't do the show. So I just...
Maybe that's why you thought that. You know what? Now that I think of it, maybe you thought that because they didn't want you on the show for 10 years.
And then I don't know. And then I guess it was all fine and something. And then we're really cool. And, you know, now I've... You know, we've become
weird.
Pals again.
I wasn't aware of that drought, but
oh no,
the chant happened again. Not on my watch.
No, so. And they've been great. And you know, every once in a while, I've had lunch with Bean a couple times, and you know, it's always nice to come in and see the guys. It really does feel like, I don't know, it feels very comfortable for me there. Like even though we were in the Burbank building, guys are in the Venice building. It's still well, that's not really Venice. I don't know what section of the
Culver City-ish.
Culver Venice.
It's Culver adjacent.
It's Turbo Venice. It's just like the edge of Venice. but I always like I don't know, I kinda like going there. It's just like I get very comfortable when I'm in a radio station environment where it's like I can hear the station being broadcast through shitty speakers somewhere.
Yeah.
And there's just posters on the walls that are just like these fucking time capsules of, oh yeah, the fucking that band that I haven't seen for a long time.
Good reference. The following. Just say the following.
The band that I was going
the old rock and rollers.
Hey, look at those musicians.
Hey, those guys.
Their guitars and their drums.
The band that I was trying to think of was I totally just escaped.
7 Mary 3.
All right, no,
Archers of Loaf.
Just as good.
Marcy Playground.
I remembered what it was. I was singing Sex and Candy earlier, as a matter of fact. I remember the band, so I'm going to redo the bit.
Okay.
Hi, look at the pose. Like, oh, yeah, Dishwalla.
Hey! Cat and Blue Cars. Was that another one of those songs that referenced God as a woman? There was a real, like, crazy run of that in the 90s.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was that one. It was that XTC song. It was a Joan Osborne song.
What if God was one of them? But that wasn't I don't know if that was a Lady God song. That was just what if God was
all-inclusive sort of.
What if God was just a slob?
I'm still mentioned. I'm still talking just about mentions. Well, and then also in the movie Empire Records, there's like a line that the girl goes, I talked to God. She says, what up? I remember that always. I was like, ooh, how progressive.
Yeah. And then Dogma, Kevin Smith, Dogma.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was in that
Alanis
one too.
Morissette comes
out. Spoiler alert! Oh, Jesus Christ, man!
Oh, sorry. Hunt nuns.
But isn't it ironic that I brought it back to.
Ouch.
Come on. What?
Ouch.
What? That was a good bow on the end of the episode. That was a good... Are you okay?
I'm all right.
I don't think Ralph's
I'm
okay.
I'm a little winded.
That joke was like a jagged little pill.
Hey! You ought to know better.
You got it right. Yeah,
I ought to know. Fucking fuck. We'll call Kevin and Bean, let them know you can't come into work tomorrow because Ralph was horribly injured in a bad pun.
I was,
He's going to take a couple
days. I've lost a limb.
Yeah, he's going to be all right. I'll see you soon. And I think you guys are on in March. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that earlier. Sure. I think it's March 10th or something.
March 10th. Yeah. Cool. We'll see you then.
We'll have a good time.
Thank you, Ralph Garman. I apologize for my tardiness today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a long time coming. We share a lot of listeners.
We do share a lot of listeners.
And for invariably, they say, when are you going to do Nerdist? You know, Chris, you should do that. So it's dream and wish fulfillment.
You should come back on regularly. Just come back on regularly and talk about whatever. It doesn't matter. If you're sick of talking about entertainment stuff, we can talk about video games.
No, it's a pleasure. I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, good. Good, good. Ralph Garman, a pleasure. Jonah Ray, a pleasure. Kyle.
Good night.
Enjoy your burrito. See.
Thanks, kids.
Thanks, Mr. Ralph Garman.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.